Well, welcome to everybody. We're going to get started because we only have now 55 minutes. So I know people will be filtering in from lunch. And this is the hard one because you're all full and ready to go to sleep. But I don't know what to do about that. I have water I can spray on you if you fall, doze off. Let me start with a word of prayer. God, thank you for your presence here for this gathering. This gathering to connect with your heart of justice, your heart of compassion. And I pray, Lord, as we talk today, as we talk throughout this weekend and we connect with one another, that we will go deeper into your heart and we will come away with transformative life change that can have an impact for your kingdom and bringing your hope and your healing, your redemption to this world and all of its brokenness that you have created. And not the brokenness you've created, but the world you've created. And we pray that you'll bring your healing through us. We thank you for that privilege. In the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen. Real quickly, before we start, my name is Brian Woe. I'm part of the Bay Area Anti-Trafficking Coalition. And I'll introduce more of myself in a minute. Let me introduce also, though, real quickly first, my colleague Betty Ann Boving, right here is our executive director. I want to make sure you all know that either of us are available throughout this weekend to talk about BAATC stuff. That's our acronym, BAATC. And we will have a table there, and the people at our table are sitting in the back, Ruby and Leo Jacques. Ruby's on our board. They can help you with stuff too. I want to know, not just for my sake, but I'd love to get an idea for who's in the room, because I don't know a lot of you. I know some of you. And I know we don't have time to go introduce ourselves all around, but one of the reasons that I think it might be helpful to get a feel for it is I know that throughout the weekend, hopefully you'll be making some connections that'll be helpful in how you engage against in the fight against trafficking. In a lot of different ways, you'll probably make connections, but maybe one of those ways today will be you'll see that there's other people in your area who have a passion for this and are doing something, and maybe you can connect. So I'm gonna go through some areas real quick just to see maybe who's here from different areas, and maybe hopefully you can see some other people that you might want to meet later today or tomorrow and talk, all right? And then that'll also help us get a feel for who came from where. How about who's, maybe just so by a show of hands, who's from this area, kind of the Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley? Okay, we have some more local type people. What about, let's go north. Like, what about kind of the Gilroy, Morgan Hill area? Anybody from, okay, you're on your own. What up further north in the South Bay, like San Jose and surrounding communities? Okay, we have some South Bay people. Up the peninsula, San Mateo County, most of the peninsula, there's a few. San Francisco County, San Francisco and surrounding cities, no one came down from the city. What about the East Bay, like Fremont and those surrounding areas? I know there's more of you though here besides the two of you, but maybe not in this room. What about farther north in the East Bay, Oakland and kind of Berkeley, Richmond, Alameda, no one from that area. East Bay, like Livermore, Pleasanton? Okay, there's a few. And Walnut Creek, Contra Costa County, that kind of one. what about other North Bay people like Marin or farther north? Okay, well, hopefully through some of the stuff we do, you can, and through other things this weekend, you can meet some people that can help you in this journey. I'm going to introduce myself by way of how I got involved in this story. And I'm going to go back 4 years, 2008. At that time, I was a pastor at Grace Community Covenant Church, which is in Los Altos. And as the associate pastor there, I had been involved in mostly the worship ministry stuff. I've been a follower of Jesus for 30 years or so at that point. And been in full-time ministry for probably half of that time. But that year, God opened the door for me to go on a trip to China. I went with a group that serves disabled orphans in China. And I'd been on mission trips before, but by God's grace, and I don't know how the timing, his plan for all the timing on this was, but when I came back from that trip, I went there and I served in an orphanage there, and I had a room full of about 10 young boys with varying amounts of disability, from cystic fibrosis to Downs and to cleft palates, or babies with cleft palates. And if you know or can imagine in China, these really represent the most abandoned and outcast people in the society. One boy that I worked with, his name is Tao Tao, and the staff nicknamed him Moses because they found him floating down a river in a basket because his parents had abandoned him. And so I really, by God's grace, I came back from that trip with a new perspective on the brokenness of this world that has not changed. I was no longer able. One of my friends had a similar experience, and he describes it like this. He said that he was no longer able to change the channel when he saw the suffering and brokenness around him. And I was no longer able to compartmentalize that in the back of my brain and just kind of move on with the stuff that doesn't bum me out, to use Mark's words from last night. And so I began to move into doing outreach ministries at our church, local and global missions. And we started getting involved in human trafficking a little bit. Fast forward to 2 summers ago in 2010, my wife and I felt like God was calling us into a deeper journey in a new way. And we felt like it was time to leave my staff position at the church and spend some time exploring into what that is, and kind of take some time to just really listen to God. And by a set of divine circumstances, we got connected with Freedom Summit 2011. 2011, yeah. How many people, any of you went to Freedom Summit? Okay, so that was January last year, and some of you were there. And so, to make a long story short, 5 days before the Freedom Summit, my wife and I got involved in doing this breakout session that had churches in the room that wanted to figure out how do we collaborate to fight trafficking together. And we realized coming out of that, there are over 100 churches represented in that room, and there were 50-some nonprofits coming to the expo, and there were 1,700 people at the Freedom Summit, all trying to figure out what do we do to partner together. And so I became part of, along with Betty Ann, of forming the Bay Area Anti-Trafficking Coalition as an organization that would help bring a collective response in the Bay Area from all these organizations, all these people, all these churches, so that we can have an impact on fighting trafficking beyond what we could all do on our own, so that we can make sure we cover all the gaps, that we're not reinventing the wheel. And that's kind of part of what our vision is. And so out of that, we've done a couple of things that I'll tell you about a little bit later, but what we're going to do today is going to talk a little bit about the church's call to justice. You've heard a lot about that already, and so I think a lot of that we'll be preaching to the choir. So I'll just touch on a couple of reasons I think that it's important that we do what we do. And then we're going to talk about what some churches have been doing and how we've been involved in that. So the whole idea isn't really just to tell you all the stuff we're doing, but to tell you, get the juices flowing. So maybe you can have ideas. Oh, our church could do that, or we could partner with someone to do this, or we can start kind of creating those synergistic connections, all right? I'm forgetting my slides. That was the Freedom Summit that some of you went to. We're planning Freedom Summit 2013, and I'll tell you about that as we get toward the end. But let me talk about Micah 6:8 a little bit. If you imagine some of you are probably pretty familiar with this verse. There's three phrases in here we'd like to talk about. Act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. Okay, and so I'm going to go backwards, and if you have you picture with me, if you will, some circles. And so let's take the walk humbly circle. Imagine a circle like this, and walk humbly, we're going to say that comprises becoming a disciple of Jesus, becoming more like Jesus, someone who's becoming a follower and becoming more mature in Christ, including evangelism and just growing mature as a disciple. And so the church, with a capital C, over the years has typically done a really good job with this walk humbly circle. It's a big circle because there's a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of money that's put into the circle. Okay, the love mercy circle, let's look at that as ministries of compassion, ministries of mercy, where we're addressing brokenness in this world, where we're doing acts of charity by feeding the hungry, by giving shelter to the homeless, by helping the AIDS victims, by providing clean water to those without it, all right? And the church has stepped up to do a lot of that, and that's a pretty big circle. It's not as big as the walk humbly circle, but it's still pretty big, and there's a lot of money, resources, and time and energy put into the love mercy circle. Now, the act justly circle, typically, we might also call it advocacy or biblical justice or redemptive justice. I'm always scared to use the term social justice because there's a lot of baggage with that. But it's all about looking at not the needs of the hungry and the enslaved, but looking at why those are there and addressing the root causes. And the church has typically not spent a lot of time doing that. The church is growing in that area, but the bubble is smaller. There's not a lot of money put in that, not a lot of organizations, not a lot of church time and effort. The church is learning to do that. But I think the church is in a place now where there's an opportunity for spiritual formation. We heard this, I think, from Justin last night, that spiritual formation through justice. There is an opportunity to do acts of justice and to be growing as disciples in that process. And so there is a big need, I think, for any churches to step into that bubble and expand that bubble. Does that make some sense so far? Okay. Then let me share two two passages with you real quickly that have had an impact on me. If you were here last night, Mark Labberton stole my whole thunder about Isaiah 58. So, although I can't claim to own it, it has had an impact on me. And so, as he talked about last night, the Israelites were doing religious things. They were doing external things and making it all about themselves and trying to manipulate God. But really, what God wants his followers to do is to reflect his image, and that includes loosing the chains of injustice, untying the cords of the yoke, setting the oppressed free, and breaking every yoke. And so if we're going to reflect that image into the world, that's one of the things God has called us to do. And as Mark said last night, our life is meaningless if we're just doing stuff that's all about ourselves. The other one, Matthew 25. This is where Jesus talks about having the sheep and the goats, the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. And they ask, or Jesus says, when you saw me hungry, when you saw me thirsty, and you gave me a drink, et cetera, they ask, when did we do that? And Jesus says, well, whenever you did that for the least of these, whenever you visited the least of these in prison or when they were sick, whenever you provided clothes for the least of these who needed clothes, whenever you provided food for the least of these. And so this just really ties in with what Mark's talking about. We're surrounded by people who are the least of these if we'll open our eyes to them and if we don't insulate ourselves from them. And as we reach out to them, we are doing as Jesus called us to do, to minister to them, including those who are enslaved. So one of the things we found out as the Bay Area Anti-Trafficking Coalition is that people generally start out seeing, we'll talk about human trafficking for a bit now. They see human trafficking happening on a global level. That's kind of often the first introduction. They see it happening in Southeast Asia, in Africa, in Eastern Europe. And then perhaps the next step of awareness is we saw a lot with the last Freedom Summit. People are realizing it happens locally. And I don't have to describe that for you because I think Jeremy did a good job this morning of painting the picture of what it looks like locally, both in sex trafficking and in labor trafficking. And people are realizing that it happens here. But now also, we realize it's coming into the places where we live. And I was just in the previous seminar about pornography, and that's one area that it's really hard to avoid. Not only, even if you don't consciously go and look at it, our culture has glorified the whole pimping lifestyle. And pornography has become not only a big issue, but a big industry. Another way it invades our homes is, you'll hear, I think, maybe now or later, Nathan George is doing a breakout session on consumerism and our choices and our buying power as consumers. And more we're becoming aware of where slavery exists in the supply chain of the products we buy. And so we're realizing that slavery is hitting home. But the good news is that we can do something in the way that we live to make an impact, both locally and globally. We can change the things that we buy. We can make smarter, wiser buying decisions. We can take the media that we're consuming and make wise choices about that. And that affects the trafficking locally. That affects trafficking the demand globally. We can advocate. We can spread awareness into the areas that God has given us spheres of influence. We can advocate for policy change. We heard about the ballot initiative that's going to be here this November. We can do a lot of things on our home front that have an impact locally and globally. So one of the things that we did since we started the BAATC a year ago is actually our birthday is coming up in a couple of weeks. We incorporated last June, and so this is all really new. We like to say we're building the plane as we fly it, and so so we're learning as we go, and hopefully you can come along on that journey with us. But we did what we called the Do It Justice Learning Cohort. And so let me tell you about this a little bit. We took some churches together that we had some relationship with, and they were from all over the Bay Area, all different types of denominations, different size churches, churches that were on different spectrum of the journey of engagement into human trafficking. And they committed, people from each of those churches committed to a 9-month cohort with us. And so what we did was we started out with a meeting, we did some monthly webinars, we had a couple of face-to-face one-day retreats, and we're wrapping up with a vision trip, which I'll tell you about in a minute. If I forget, remind me to tell you about the vision trip, because I think it's pretty cool. But the whole goal was for them to come away with an understanding of how they could mobilize their congregations to fight trafficking better. And so hopefully this will just give you some ideas of some of the things that churches have been doing. What we did, we took these different spheres, and we have to give credit for some of these spheres to an organization called Oasis, who gave us the idea for some of these. But we took these different spheres of life that have to work together in order to not only rescue trafficking victims, but to keep people from being trafficked. And what the key reason we thought these would be good for churches is because your typical church has people in all of these spheres. So let me show them to you, and then you'll understand a little better. The first one we looked at was consumers. And every church has consumers in it. We're all consumers if we have a wallet and we buy stuff. And that's kind of the piece that Nathan George does with Trade as One. And we talked about supply chain slavery and the effect we can have on the global demand for slavery through our consumer buying choices. We talked about schools, and we talked about schools in a number of ways. We talked about students who are getting engaged. This next generation of high school, college students, young adults are very justice-oriented and want to make a difference. And we're just constantly amazed by some of the people, like Zach Hunter, who are making a change for God's kingdom. And so we talked about how we can mobilize people. Whether we have youth groups at our churches, whether we have kids who are students, we talked about ways that churches are engaging students to fight against trafficking. And we got teachers together, and we found teachers who are doing things in their classrooms, whether it's world history class talking about abolitionism, or whether it's an economics class talking about supply chain slavery, or whether it's just a science teacher who's got a club that's showing call and response or something like that. And teachers can have an impact where they live and where they work. Then we also talked about media. And we talked about how national media is slowly picking up trafficking, like the CNN Freedom Project and other mediums. We talked about local media and how we can interact with our local media to get newspapers or news people to do trafficking-oriented stories to spread awareness. One woman at one of the churches realized after we did this webinar that there was a KCBS news anchor at her church, and she got together with her and started talking to her about trafficking, and this news person now has an idea to do a couple different pieces for the news about trafficking. And so you never know until you start exploring these connections who might be key people to help you in your fight against trafficking at your church. We talked about local businesses, and we focused a lot on restaurants and hotels. We heard a little bit about that from Jeremy this morning. One thing that we discovered as we were getting ready for this webinar was a very high-end hotel on the peninsula that we realized is known on a certain night of the week to bring prostitutes in, and a lot of them were suspected to be underage. And so that started a whole new dialogue, and there's opportunities to talk about the businesses and restaurants and hotels in your area that where there may be something suspicious going on, or where you can spread awareness through engaging in business owners who may be at your church. We talked about legislators, and we talked about the CASE Act, which is coming up in November, and the TVPA nationwide. But we also had a woman from the Central Valley Justice Coalition. Someone was just asking about them over lunch. But they were doing work in Fresno with the city council to redefine their massage parlor ordinances there, because they'd seen this growth of Asian massage parlors in Fresno, and they were sure that they weren't all legit. And so they're working together to advocate for policy change in their local area. And then we talked about first responders. There's a question this morning about ER doctors, and one of the things that I've heard John Vanek say, formerly of the San Jose Police Department, is that often a trafficking victim's first contact outside of their trafficker is with a medical person, whether it's at a clinic or an ER. And so getting doctors in your congregation trained to recognize the signs and protocols of what to do. We also talked to domestic violence. We talked to someone from a domestic violence shelter on that webinar, and they talked about the difference between the way a domestic violence victim presents themselves versus a human trafficking victim, which is very interesting as well. And so your church may be involved with some women's shelters or something like that, which is another good place, a point of connection to start at. And then finally, we had John Vanek come on and talk about law enforcement and give us his unique perspective on what's going on from their end. And so, like I said, most churches have people in most of these spheres. And so as you identify who some of those people are and you start poking around, not everybody's going to respond, and some people will brush you off, but there will be people who will say, hey, I'm interested in that, and maybe I have another connection, and there will be someone who wants to do something, and there is someone who has a new idea, and things grow as you begin to poke around into these different spheres that you've been placed in. And I think, like Jeremy said this morning, we can all be involved in some way in the spheres of influence that we've been placed in. All right, are there questions about that? Okay, the last thing we're going to do, go ahead and interrupt me if you want to, but the last thing we're going to do with this group in a couple of weeks is this vision trip. We're going to get on a bus for 2 days and travel around the Bay Area and visit We're going to visit some of the different trafficking organizations and see face-to-face ways that churches can partner together with places like Freedom House, Trade Is One, Slavery Footprint, Because Justice Matters, Case Act, New Day for Children. And so there's all these organizations in the Bay Area doing things. And a lot of them want to figure out, how do we get churches involved? And a lot of churches want to know, how do we partner? So we love to just kind of build that network of people so that we can help these organizations do what they do better, and so we can help churches get more mobilized throughout their congregations. Okay, so let me just talk about some of the things we've seen and learned just working with churches, and we'll have some time for questions in a little bit. First of all, I kind of alluded to this. We really want to affirm a lot of churches have existing ministries that might not be labeled trafficking. Like, we've heard about foster children are a very at-risk group, and so maybe your church has foster children ministry. A lot of these foster kids get recruited by pimps, and so if you're doing foster children ministry, then you are taking a piece of the trafficking pie and doing something with it. If you're working with homeless kids or drug addicts or any at-risk youth are very prone to becoming trafficking victims, especially child sex trafficking. And so if you look at some of the things you're doing that might not be labeled trafficking and start adopting a common language across these ministries, then you can kind of get on people's radar and get their awareness in their head that all these things can contribute to trafficking, and as we address them in the specific ways, you know, we can't all be out there raiding brothels, and we can't all be out there putting the pimps in jail, but we can all have a piece in building awareness in the places we are. And we may be doing foster ministry, and that's the place that God wants us to be to protect kids who might be trafficked there, or whatever that may be. And then I mentioned Trade Is One, because a lot of churches are understanding that even though the whole concept of slavery in our supply chain of our products is very complicated, anybody with a wallet can get involved in making a difference in their buying habits. And so a lot of churches have done things. We saw churches last year do fair trade fairs with Trade Is One, and promoting. I know Nathan really... Right now, fair trade often is thought of just kind of like buying scarves and purses as gifts, but I know his whole goal, and I think a lot of people, is to move fair trade into a regular consumable buying habit. And so they're doing things on that end, and as that whole movement progresses, there's the opportunity for churches to have fair trade boutiques, to promote fair trade products, because as we buy those, and or even if Slavery Footprint keeps their movement going, there will be slave-free products as another label. And so the global demand for slavery, whether it's slavery that's being used to put mine the metal for electronics or to pick the cotton in our shirts, the demand will go down. And so consumers have a large voice in what kind of products manufacturers create and where they come from. And so if we begin to leverage that power as the church, then we can make a difference in the demand for global slavery. Some churches have opened their doors just to host events. Take the Freedom Summit, for example. Harbor Light Church in Fremont opened the door to host the Freedom Summit. And after that, last January, the senior pastor got real excited about fighting trafficking. They've done a lot more, and they were super excited. We were thinking about looking for a different venue for Freedom Summit 2013, and the guy that is in charge of facilities there was actually... He's saying, I was really kind of hurt and disappointed that you guys were looking for someplace else. And so they're really excited to continue just to be a place where people can gather to talk about trafficking. And that has also energized their congregation to do those things. So churches can be a place, especially if you have a facility. I know some churches are mobile, but you can host trainings, you can host conferences. There's something coming up that we just found out about called Free to Laugh, and it's potentially coming to the Bay Area next year. And so there's a church in Los Altos, Bridges Community Church, and they're going to open their doors to this ministry, which brings in a professional comedian to do a comedy show that raises money, and that's going to go toward anti-trafficking organizations. And so they're just saying, hey, we'll host this event. A lot of people come in, find out about trafficking, raise money for trafficking, and we would like to play that part of hosting the event. And hopefully their congregation will grow in their engagement as well through just opening their doors. And then one other area that I'm just really interested in exploring, I haven't really seen how this might work yet, but the whole area of John schools or first offender prostitution programs, where men who are caught buying sex for the first time have to go through this one-day program typically. There's different types all over the country. But I think churches are a great place. They have an opportunity to get involved and perhaps to host a John's school where the men who are arrested, with the, from what we've heard about these schools, especially the one in San Francisco, the recidivism rate for someone who goes through the John's school is drops in a huge amount compared to those who don't go through John's schools. And so they understand what's going on with prostitutes, and a lot of them are trafficked and not there by choice. And I was gonna tell a story, but that's right. But there's an opportunity there, I think, for churches to address why men buy sex and to bring down the demand for men going to prostitutes. And so we've seen this two-prong engagement, and I see if this makes sense to you, because this is what we've seen also with our organization, that there's this one prong of awareness where we want people to, there's a need for awareness, and Jeremy and Perla talked about this morning, they get out and talk to as many people as possible, and we get called to talk to people, but as you talk to people, there's the eyes and ears kind of become the neighborhood watch, so to speak, of the Bay Area, but not all those people are going to get deeply engaged. Not everybody can do everything, right? So at the same time, there's this, and you can do this, churches can do this with events. They can have a fair trade fair, they can do a movie showing. They're going to have a movie tonight here. And you can do all kinds of events to bring awareness to a larger group of people. But at the same time, there needs to be this kind of walking alongside smaller group of people who's really more deeply engaged and the ones who are really felt called to do something in a deeper level. And so whether that might be a small group that's studying scriptures on justice, that might be a small group that's going to serve and volunteer at a shelter, or a small group that's out getting signatures for a ballot initiative or whatever it is. And so I think often that's what you'll see at churches. You'll see some bigger events to get awareness out, and then out of those events, you'll see a smaller group that really kind of takes the issue and engages with it and figures out what is our unique role to play in fighting trafficking. And that's kind of what we hope we're helping the churches to do, to figure out what's the unique place that your church has as far as their passion, their gifting, and their networks, and who do they partner with in order to mobilize their congregation to fight the issue. I'm going to give you a church example. I'm going to ask Betty Ann to come up and share a little bit about her church, Menlo Park Presbyterian Church, and they some of the things that they have done in their journey to fight trafficking. And I don't know if we have another mic for you. You probably don't need a mic, Betty Ann.
Close to yours for the taping. We just want to share with you kind of what we would call often after someone is rescued in a trafficking case, and Jeremy talked about that a lot this morning, we would call it a continuum of care, right? So as the church and as groups that are working with service providers, you would look at it as a continuum of care for a victim. In the same way, those of us in churches that are trying to activate those around us or have them really join us in the fight, and more on the prevention side of things, it would be to look at continuum of engagement. So we kind of use those two terms of continuum of care for the victim, continuum of engagement for the advocate. And we feel like Menlo Park Press was just a group that really showed us kind of as they stepped on this, it was really for them just a chronology of putting one foot in front of the other. So first thing was they used their Easter offering and they invited folks to actually give financially to say we're going to take a stance with some of our current mission partners. We're going to ask them to do something around the issue of human trafficking, and they had just an overwhelming response. So from that Easter offering, they then gave us enough money to help us kind of have the seed money to then plan the first Freedom Summit. So as we're planning the first Freedom Summit, then they held in Menlo Park, they did a run in Menlo Park, there was just a freedom run, and along this 5K route, they put up facts about human trafficking. Again, as Brian talked about, kind of just trying to raise the amount of people that are using the common language to even know what human trafficking is. The next thing was after the Freedom Summit, everybody was so just amazed at what had kind of, how God blew us away with just how many people came and the momentum in the Bay Area. We said, how do we keep that going? And so Menlo held a six-week film series and started previewing movies on the issue and bringing in speakers and having what they called a six-week launch group, which was to get new people in the church who were just asking the question of what this is to understand six different angles of what human trafficking was. Out of that, they, instead of just saying, they instead of calling every event fighting trafficking, they started saying, well, trafficking is domestic servitude, child labor, forced prostitution. And so that when they started using the term trafficking, or just more so getting down to actually drilling into what they actually were going to say they're specializing in, Menlo has said, we fight sex trafficking, and we're going to fight the consumerism issue. And so they let other churches then say, well, we're going to be all about, you know, maybe child labor in restaurants in the same area, or we're going to work with hotels. But Menlo really, out of the huge issue of trafficking, has limited it down now and said, we're about sex trafficking and about the consumer choice. And so now they're in the process of then developing partnerships with groups that are in those areas. And there's also another group that started that was a human trafficking awareness book club. And out of that book club, they just meet once a month and they're reading different books. But out of that time of just continued increased awareness, they are actually helping us host a once a month gathering for anyone who is interested in volunteering for the next Freedom Summit. Because we believe that these events like a Mount Hermon weekend and like a Freedom Summit, they're not meant to be kind of like a, you know, come together and get all pumped up and then go home and just forget about it again. It really is, in a sense, I feel like we're trying to push a rock up a hill and having everybody recognize this huge injustice. And so it's almost, we put these things on the calendar to help us as church mobilizers continue to have something to rally around. So if you might want to consider the Freedom Summit 2013 in that matter, it's just us kind of trying to come alongside you and your community to say, how could we be involved for the next 6 months? And let's take it one step at a time.
Thanks. So that's a good example of kind of one church's journey, and they're all going to be different. We have some takeaways we'll send you off with in a little bit, but I really want to take now, I mean, you're all in the same room. I'd love to take some time to dialogue. Maybe share about some of the barriers that you've faced in your church as far as your efforts to get engaged in trafficking, or on the other hand, some of the big success stories that can maybe encourage one another. So I'm not going to have a mic, so I'll just I'll repeat your questions if anybody wants to kind of share some of that stuff, and we can talk about it and maybe have other people share their experiences about some of the things they've tried, some of the difficulties they've had, some of the things that have been helpful. Okay.
President
Thanks, Jonathan. MyRefugeHouse.org. Great story, encouraging about the refuge house in the Philippines in Cebu, and we'll go back there.
Is this some ragging time?
Some what time?
Ragging.
Sure. If it's encouraging to us, then please go right ahead. Thanks, Sarah. That's another encouraging story just about what's going on in the Unitarian and Universalist movement. And just to clarify, I had no authority to give her permission to come. They just wanted to check in to make sure who was welcome to the table. And we really feel like the church, with God's heart for justice, needs to lead the way, but everybody needs to join in, as we've been hearing all weekend, that to make a difference. So, Leo in the back. Thanks, Leo. Just take the opportunity to share the information with people. In the back. Thanks, Sherry. She's doing a seminar later. And I think one of the key things, issues that some churches face is they have people who say, I want to volunteer, and it's just, it's not easy to go show up at a rescue house or whatever because you need to be trained or certified or whatever. But it's a good example. They have all these churches that are sending volunteers to different victim services organizations. And not only that, but I think knowing who to call and where to learn information, we're here to help you get information, be equipped, and know who to call and what you need to know to talk to people or to give out information is key. So I would, from these stories, I would encourage you to dream big. You don't know if you're going to end up with a house in the Philippines or you're going to end up with a booth at a street fair, but God can do some huge things as you make yourself available, and I can testify to that with my life, but yeah. Does anybody want to jump in before I can say something? Dave?
Yeah, I've pastored a church in Alameda for 15 years. It's in a Presbyterian form branch. And I can attest to the fact that some churches and leaders in churches and some pastors hide behind theology and hide behind history even and say, well, we don't want to become a social gospel church, you know, so we don't want to get involved in too many issues. That itself is a barrier because while the gospel demands our active involvement in this, it's an easy duck and cover, I guess. And I've seen that. I've felt that resistance personally and been tempted to hide behind it myself because, hey, I'm just supposed to go there and preach. I don't have to get involved.
And I think we can say that the gospel is a holistic thing. It's not just to save someone's soul, but it's reaching out to physical needs, and Jesus demonstrated that in a very tangible way so that people could do that. And one of our board members is facing a similar thing with his church, a kind of a backlash against the social gospel and Ruby. Thank you. All right. It's a good reminder of just of the value of persistence. I rarely, the first door you knock on will kind of open to something huge, but you keep plugging away at it, and God in his perfect timing will raise up the right people at the right time. And often, the senior pastor won't always make it their issue, but one of the things we've heard is that if the senior pastor can make space for it, then other people can take it up. Especially, so, and then another person has told us, well, you've got to get to the pastor's wife or husband, whatever it may be. And when they're on board, then the senior pastor will be on board. But we'll come back to you, Dave. Mary?
Yeah, I wanted to share that Camp Archer at Saratoga Federated, we don't yet have a concentrated group, you know, just working together on human trafficking. But we do have individuals like myself who are involved with other groups in the Bay Area, International Justice Mission, and various anti-trafficking groups. And those voices are loud. I mean, we do talk to individuals in the church. We let them know, you know, who's at the forefront and fighting the fight and what we are doing individually. One thing that I found really interesting, I've been a voice in the fight against pornography and how pornography literally fuels human trafficking. And at times I've wondered if I should open my mouth. You know, who am I talking to? Who might I offend? But I have felt the Lord, you know, speak to me. He has given me a boldness, and I am really eager, you know, to bring up the subject. And I do talk about it, and people listen. People are shocked, you know, when you relate some facts and statistics and what's actually happening. And it's so horribly destructive. So anyway, I mean, just being an individual voice, if you can't, we have some wonderful, wonderful ministries in the church, and I know everybody feels like they're spread so thin. And I've been in leadership, and I feel, you know, fragmented at the moment, not being able to really get something together, organize a group. But the individual voices really made a difference. Just talking about it and sharing about, you know, what we are doing and what we can do. And so that, you know, that makes a difference as well.
Thank you. Do you, over here?
Just as a follow-up to that issue of the senior pastor support, Mary's a great example, having activists in the congregation, I think, is actually preferable to having it be the particular fashion of the pastor in the church. Because the pastor needs to sort of think globally and holistically about his church community or her church community. And so if they get on a hobby horse with one particular issue, even if it's the one that you happen to be passionate about, that may actually detrimentally affect the health of the congregation. But if the pastor is making space for, both in the pulpit and in the opening avenues for you as an activist in the body of Christ, that is, I think, exactly, and that's what the Ephesians 4 tells us.
Good point.
The pastors and evangelists are to equip the saints for doing the work of ministry.
Yes, thanks.
And so that's a real important piece, I think, you know, of the things that I got passionate about, sometimes took an inordinate amount of my time, so I was running up against, you know, other information coming at me that I was not then processing and really looking at the whole life care of the whole congregation. And flipping that over to my current work in radio now, there's a similar situation in that the culture of our radio station, I work at KFAX, is kind of at a magnified level of what was going on in the church. It's like CNN, for example, that last year's 2011 focus with CNN was a real bright spot, but like I was just reading about it, I think that included at the end of 2011. I don't think
they're
still going.
Yeah, so thanks. There's one of the workshops I think tomorrow is going to talk about not just getting the guilt action or response, but making it a compassion permanent thing, compassion permanence. So one more thing, and then we'll start wrapping up. You would think. Thanks for that reminder. And I think that brings up just as we go, some things to really pray about. Pray about that your leadership will make space, and that sometimes that requires time, sometimes requires a lot of hard discussions, sometimes a change of heart, or sometimes it may just the door may open if you just kind of broach the subject. Pray also for God to raise up the right people around you for that catalytic group that's gonna explode into a transition home or to some type of new anti-trafficking ministry. We keep saying that the best solutions to fight trafficking are yet to be discovered, and really, I think the next generation, people like Zach Hunter, are gonna create new things, new ways to fight this injustice that we haven't even thought of yet. And so, pray for those right people for you to talk to invest in those connections you're gonna make. The three things that we may kind of leave you with, as far as we're concerned, is we're looking at the next Do It Justice Learning cohort. We did this one group was kind of our beta test group, and we learned a lot from them. We're going to start another one, hopefully, probably right after the Freedom Summit in the spring. And so if you're in a church that you think might be interested, get in touch with us. I'll leave some cards out here. It may not look, we're going to probably change the format a little bit. We're trying to figure out what the best way for it to look like. It may be more kind of some regional churches that meet regularly. I'll leave these up here. It may be some combination of larger trainings and then smaller groups that do face-to-face stuff versus just the webinars and things we did. So the next Do It Justice Learning cohort, and then we mentioned the Freedom Summit 2013. Put that on your calendar for January 25th and 26th in Harbor Light Church in Fremont. We really want this, our vision for this is to really be to spotlight the stories of what people are doing, to spotlight the local heroes of the Bay Area who are fighting trafficking. So that people, when they show up at the Freedom Summit, they will see people talking about their stories and they'll say, hey, I could do that, or that person's like me, or maybe they'll think, you know, that person does that there, but I can do this. And like I said, not everybody is gonna be out there punching pimps, and not everybody is gonna be out there in courts trying to prosecute people, but everybody can do something. People can talk to the people around them, people can go into their particular professions and get people trained, people can hold movie nights, have book clubs, whatever it is. And so we want people to come away from this Freedom Summit with an understanding of what their unique call might be to engage in this issue. And so we're looking for individual volunteers. The last Freedom Summit took 100 and some people on that day and in planning to get it off the ground. And we're figuring out ways that churches as a group can get involved, whether it's financially or actually doing something logistically at the Freedom Summit. So we would love to have you involved in making this next catalytic event kind of be another milestone for the Bay Area in building our response to trafficking? And you can get on our mailing list. We're really just, we like to think we kind of have our fingers on some of the pulse of what's going on in the Bay Area, and we're involved in various events every month. And so we send out an email newsletter about once a month, and you can see what might be interesting. You obviously, I don't think, would want to go to everything that we talk about, but there may be some things that you invite your friends to that may catalyze a movement at your church. And so there's a sign-up sheet at our table if you want to get on our mailing list, or you can grab one of my cards and just send me an email, and we'll put you on the list. And hopefully, just having you all in the room together, people from different churches all over the Bay Area, this is an opportunity just to get some ideas and some inspiration. It's not often we can get people from all these churches together just to share. And so hopefully that's just the beginning of some conversations, and some of you will connect and go deeper with each other or with us. And so we appreciate you coming today, and we'll bless you as you go. Thanks.